Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. We have a lot to share today, including how we can reduce the prevalence of colorectal cancer and how small-scale gardens, the ones you do in your backyard, are actually providing sustainable food without damaging the soil. And study explores the connection between diets high in the monounsaturated fat and emerging cardiovascular disease risk factors. Also, how low-carbohydrate diets can reduce inflammation, and gluten-free diets can reduce the risk of diabetes, and much more. Then, from our environment, I'm going to be addressing the movement to go more sustainable using thorium for nuclear energy. Not a good idea. And it is not the so-called safe nuclear. This is all a myth. I'll be sharing insights from Christina Sarich at Nation of Change and dispelling that we should be using this at all. Also from Colin Todhunter, the crumbling myths and double standards of the genetically modified biotech sector. They're losing. From our public health segment today, the latest information from the peer-reviewed journal Vaccine, the extremely disturbing, though virtually underreported or unreported side of immunization campaigns, that multiple infant vaccines are linked dramatically increasing death. I'll give you that. Also an issue today, why sex feels good, but why it can be stressful. A perspective that I'm sure many of you have not considered, at least not the underlying biochemistry. Dr. Loretta Bruning from Alternate will share some insights, and I'll share perspectives as well. My guest in the second part of our program is Richard Gage. He is the San Francisco-based architect and member of the American Institute for Architects. He is the founding member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. They have 2,100 architects, engineers, scientists, physicists, and tens of thousands of supporters who are challenging the official explanation on the collapse of the World Trade Center buildings. I'll be asking him to share with us all relevant contradictions from the official report and evidence to support those who are challenging it. So you see, we have a lot to share today. Let's begin. First up, we know that natural coca is very good for you. I've given you several reports on how it can lower the incidence of cardiovascular disease and cancers. This is just the latest. This is cancer, oxidative stress, and dietary antioxidants. And here's what it has to say. Quote, coca shown to have a role in colorectal cancer reduction. It is the polyphenols that can suppress oxidative stress that provokes the proliferation of cancer cells in the colon. Now, we know that colorectal cancer is a major contributor to cancer-related death. And that's because of an overproduction of reactive oxygen species, or what are called ROS, R-O-S, and those can induce the production of cancer cells. Quote, ROS overproduction may provoke structure and function damages in colonic cells and induce somatic mutations and neoplastic transformations. Because of this, the suppression of oxidative stress by natural antioxidant compound has gained interest as an effective approach to this prevention. Oxidative stress has the potential to affect a large array of carcinogenic pathways involving proliferation of initiated cells and enhance malignant transformation, saying, quote, now, in lay language, what that means is that chocolate can act as a natural preventative because it quenches these free radicals, turns off the inflammation, and is able to have enormous benefit. So, one more way we can help ourselves. I really appreciate how many people are now looking for information on small-scale gardening. Starting, as is wise, with a small plot I suggest in your backyard or on your roof if you have that capacity. And then have one entire season. Try different modalities, try different soils, and see what works. But here's the latest. That quote from Julia Wilson, Natural News, urban and small-scale farming is a growing trend that's healthy and sustainable for the environment. Today, there is a waiting list for more than 90,000 people attempting to acquire allotments or plots of land used for small-scale gardening. And the world's largest independent source of breaking research, Alpha Galileo, revealed that, quote, the natural way of gardening is significantly healthier than intensive farmed soils. Now, this was published in the Journal of Applied Ecology. And what they're showing is small-scale crop growing in urban areas produce, quote, food sustainability without damaging the soil. So I think that's very important. So good for them. More people are trying to do gardening in their backyard and or small urban lots. And it's a movement that won't be stopped. A study explores the connection between diets high in the monounsaturated fat and cardiovascular disease. This was presented at the American Society for Nutrition Scientific Sessions and their meeting of experimental biology. Penn State University researchers, quote, showed avocado consumption decreased LDL particle number in small, dense LDL cholesterol in overweight and obese subjects, end quote. The takeaway message from this study is that eat avocados and it can help lower cholesterol and the bad LDL cholesterol, and that could save lives. And that's because of the type of monounsaturated fat that it contains. By the way, olives contain similar type of monounsaturated fat. So now just put the two together. Make yourself a nice avocado salad. And if you want to do a salad, let me share a salad I think most of you could enjoy. Or someone who may not be big on salads, they would really like this. First, get bib lettuce. It's the softest lettuce. And it has a really great mouthfeel to it. It's not something you're just going to chew and chew and chew. And you wash the leaves. Take a whole leaf and you wash it on top, then on the bottom. You massage the leaf because there's little wrinkles in the leaf and little specks of dirt, especially if it's organic, can be underneath there. So you get that out. Then you agitate it and rinse, agitate, rinse, agitate, rinse, and water. Then it's clean, ready to go. Then you take, and they're not too large leaves, and you put them around a bowl, and then take some fresh pomegranate seeds, and you take about 3 tablespoons and you put it on those leaves. Then you put another leaf on top of that, another, and then take up some diced pears and you dice the pear and you put the diced pears on it. Then you take some sauerkraut and you put sauerkraut on that, and then you put your dressing, whatever dressing you choose. I would like to use a mustard honey vinaigrette and a little Himalayan sea salt, crushed black pepper. That is a tasty salad, because once you start eating the lettuce, you're folding the lettuce over, and it's got the sweet and the cold and crunchy from the pomegranate. It has the tartar, the little tang from the sauerkraut. It has the real softer sweetness from the pear. And then the salad dressing blends it together. And every bite tastes different. Therefore, every time you pick up your fork, you're going to have a different sensation. So, but that's also, you could add avocados. That's the last thing I would put in there. And that way you have your olive oil and you've got your oil, monounsaturated fat from the avocado. Now you could also add olives in there as well. We know that we should be eating complex carbohydrate diets for ultimate health and good quality fiber. We also know that most Americans eat high refined carbohydrates, cereals, especially sugar-coated cereals, and breads, pastas, white rice. These are really bad carbohydrates. So go to a natural low-carbohydrate diet. This is from Linköping University in Sweden. Quote, a low-carbohydrate diet, but not a low-fat diet, reduces inflammation in patients with type 2 diabetes. Now we know that people with diabetes have more inflammation going on in their body. They're far more susceptible to inflammation affecting them in the eyes and affecting nerve cells with neuropathy. So anytime you can reduce inflammatory markers in the blood, you're saving a life. So that's important. And this was published in the Annals of Medicine. So low carbohydrate. Now what would be some low carbohydrate? Beans, pulses, legumes, starchy vegetables, like rutabaga, kohlrabi, parsnips, turnips, easy to consume. And by the way, one of the tastiest of all of your root vegetables is a parsnip. You simply take a scraper that you would scrape, let's say, if you wanted to scrape off the skin of a cucumber, and you scrape it, and then you cut it into thin strips, real thin. Then you let that marinate in olive oil with some crushed pepper. Then take some white, long-stem French mushrooms. And don't worry about the top. In fact, it's actually better if you have no top or a little tiny top, because it's not the top of the mushroom that you want. It is the rest of it, the stem. That's where the sweetness is, and that's where the medicinal value is. So anyhow, you get these, you wash them, then you thinly slice them. And now you marinate those. Then you can also take a portobello mushroom and you clean the top. You use a sponge and clean it. And then you dice those real fine. Then get some garlic and you saute that at a low temperature and put that on a bed of brown rice or millet or quinoa. A wonderful lunch. The flavor of those French mushrooms are sweet, slightly almond nutty, great mouthfeel, and when you combine them with the parsnips, wonderful dish. So another little thing that we can do that we can enjoy. And if you want to help your children avoid type 1 diabetes, a gluten-free diet from the University of Copenhagen, a new laboratory experiment shows that type 1 eating, meaning without type 1 anti-gluten diet, help prevent the diabetes from manifesting as seriously as it otherwise would. Quote, preliminary tests show that a gluten-free diet in humans has a positive effect on children with newly diagnosed type 1 diabetes. We therefore hope that a gluten-free diet during pregnancy and lactation may be enough to protect high-risk children from developing diabetes later in life, end quote. And that was the head of the Faculty of Health and Medical Sciences, published in the journal Diabetes. Of course, you really want to help prevent diabetes, type 1 diabetes. Why don't you question, challenge the vaccines children are given? I'm Gary Nall. Let's now go to our environmental segment. There has been a push to use the so-called safe thorium for nuclear energy. I am completely against it. Totally against it. Why? Well, as is Christina Sarich, because how can anything be safe for the environment and humans if its half-life is 14 billion years? By the way, that's older than the Earth. And it's radiotoxic. Now, questions concerning Fukushima are still out there. We still don't know how bad it's going to get. It's not being stopped. And nuclear power in the United States is plaguing us. There's lots of faults with nuclear power. So now there's this new golden child being propagandized as the savior of nuclear energy by the nuclear energy industry, of course. And it's thorium. T-H-O-R, thor-I-M, I-U-M. And they're saying it's safe. It's an alternative fuel. And it's for the next generation of nuclear production. It's not true. Thorium does contain six naturally occurring isotopes, but one of the remains of nuclear energy generation utilizing this element is thorium-232. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency also admits that thorium can be artificially produced. They describe thorium's radioactive properties, quote, as thorium-232 undergoes radioactive decay, it emits an alpha particle with an accompanying gamma radiation and forms radium-228. This process of releasing radiation and forming a new radionuclide continues until stable 208 is formed. The half-life of thorium-232 is 14 billion years. Now, supporters of thorium as a nuclear energy alternative argue that it has 200 times the energy content of uranium without creating plutonium, the main ingredient used in nuclear weapons of mass destruction. But according to Nobel Prize-winning physicist Dr. Carlo Rubbia, just one ton of thorium can generate as much as 200 tons of uranium. And according to Maximum Singarkin, deputy chair of the Russia State Duma Committee for Natural Resources, currents in the world oceans are so structured that the areas of seafood captured near the U.S. northwest coast are more likely to contain radioactive nuclides than even the worst areas around Japan. So you don't want this anywhere. In comes thorium. It's touted with the use of misinformation campaigns and fear-mongering about meeting energy needs. But thorium can't be considered a safe nuclear substitute because it's highly radiotoxic. It may produce much greater energy yields, that I agree, but can also have much more dire impacts on a human being's health. If someone were able to inhale an amount of thorium, the bone surface dose is 200 times that if inhaling the same amount of uranium. And thorium also requires longer spent fuel storage, meaning you have to keep it in water 24/7 for 200,000 years before it is considered safe to store elsewhere. And also, most importantly, thorium cannot produce energy on its own. It requires a fissible material, such as uranium-235, in order to make nuclear fuel. It also needs something like plutonium-239 to operate the nuclear reactor. The World Nuclear Association also admits that, quote, there are several tons of plutonium in our biosphere, a legacy of atmospheric weapons testing in the 1950s and 60s. Plutonium is a highly toxic substance. Thorium reactors would also likely be run utilizing sodium fluoride, a toxic substance with its own health concerns. So they say, well, let's get one going in India, in the U.S., and China, and Russia, and France. Build a successful commercial thorium nuclear plant. There isn't one now. The Germans experimented with thorium reactor called THTR-300. The German scientists found even with the thorium reactor, there was substantial risk in a loss of coolant. And we know what happens when you lose a coolant. Look at Fukushima. China even announced this year that it intended to develop a thorium reactor. But nuclear radiologists have said, don't. And I would agree with that. Also today, from our environmental segment, I want to talk about the idea that the GMO movement in the United States is picking up steam. We have millions of citizens working together cooperatively to say no to GMOs. We had about 327 who came to our meeting the other night because I gave free DVDs out, and I know how many we took. And they came throughout the evening, and I want to thank them, because these are people who are at the forefront of trying to make change. We want to stop GMOs in New York State. We want to stop them in every state. So tomorrow we're marching against Monsanto, starting at 1 o'clock in New York at Union Square. But there'll be hopefully 5 million of us marching around the world in over 400 cities, and that will get some attention. So please join us tomorrow. There'll be some talks by some of the activists, myself included, and then we'll do our march, standing up and speaking out against genetically modified organisms. This is from Colin Todhunter from Countercurrents. I won't read it all, but you'll get enough of the insight to know why we all should be concerned about the quality of our food. Quote, the GMO biotech sector is involved in a multi-pronged campaign to influence governments and the public about the benefits of its products. It uses various means. It sets up or infiltrates institutions and co-ops prominent political scientific figures to do its bidding. It hijacks regulatory and policy-making bodies. With help from the U.S. government, it assumes strategic importance in international trade negotiations and is then able to set a policy and research agenda, as has been the case in India, with the Knowledge Initiative on Agriculture and the funding of agriculture research within the country. It is shaping free trade agreements to its own advantage. It mounts personal attacks on and tries to discredit key scientists who question its claims. And it arguably regards contamination as a means of trying to eventually render the whole debate about GMOs meaningless. With its huge financial resources and the full backing of the U.S. State Department, and by the way, Hillary Clinton, when she was the head of the State Department, Secretary of State, she oversaw the distribution of information to countries that were not on board with GMOs, threatening them with retaliation. Remember that in the next election cycle. However, despite all of its wealth and influence, it's turning out to be a bad week for GMO biotech industry. When is good science bad science and bad science good science? Well, when the industry says so. In 2012, a study led by Professor Seralini called into question the safety of GMOs and Roundup herbicide. The paper that conveyed the results was last year retracted by a prestigious scientific journal. The publisher of Food and Chemical Toxicology has now compelled the journal's editor, Wallace Hayes, to publish a write of reply by the Seralini team. According to Seralini's team, the editor uses double standards when it comes to publishing in favor of the industry. Hayes retracted the study despite the fact that he found neither fraud nor conscious misinterpretation. In a new article published there, the scientists explain why they do not accept his conclusions. They denounce the lack of scientific validity of the reason given for the retraction and explain why. The publisher said that the rat strain used was appropriate and described the statistical results in depth concerning the blood and urine parameters affected, proving the liver and kidney pathologies and the mammary tumors are solidly scientifically based. So, in any case, they're fighting back. And, quote from Professor Seralini, we are forced to conclude that the decision to withdraw our paper was based on unscientific double standards applied by the editor. These double standards can only be explained by pressure from the GMO and agrochemical industry to force acceptance of GMOs and Roundup. The most flagrant illustration is the appointment of Richard Goodman, a former Monsanto employee. Let me repeat this. Richard Goodman, a former Monsanto employee, onto the publishing editorial board of the magazine. Soon after the publication of our article, then he moves to have it withdrawn. Worse, this pro-industry bias also affects regulatory authorities, such as European Food Safety Authority, which gives favorable opinions on risky products based upon mediocre studies commissioned by the companies wishing to commercialize the products, as well as systematically dismissing the findings of independent scientists, which cast doubt on their safety. Then he goes into greater depth. So good for you, Professor Seralini, for standing up and speaking out. You're one of many independent scientists who are telling us the truth. But it also means the opposite. Always pull back from any argument and ask what could be the motive for someone knowing the truth and not speaking it, or knowing there is a truth beyond which they're aware and not seeking it. There is a motive of empowerment. The closer you are to those in power, the more you benefit. Hence, look at all the corporate Democrats, or look at all the corporate Republicans lining up in the Council on Economic Advisors to the President, and looking at those think tanks, including the Council on Foreign Relations, that will support the President or the administration's positions, even though they are not really supportable. Because the moment you challenge those in authority, you will be not just challenged, but you will be attacked, ridiculed, and mocked. And how do they know with certainty that that will happen? Because they control the media. Remember, the very people that control the media, including Rupert Murdoch's media, are not going to have their own reporters saying, "We can't do this story. It's a lie. We can't attack this person. I've done the research, and it's not true." That person wouldn't last a heartbeat in today's highly politicized, commercialized media. And then you look at the think tanks and where they get their money. Whether they're conservative or liberal think tanks is irrelevant, because they all come to the same conclusion. Those who have something to commercialize or something that needs to be protected politically are kept in the loop. Why do you see the same pathetic talking heads on MSNBC and NPR and the networks and Fox? These are bright people. They're well-regarded within their community. They are from the Ivy League schools. They are respected. Many are very wealthy. But when was the last time any of them had the courage to tell the truth from an independent, critical, analytical mindset? That you will see not happening. Our media today is a wasteland. So, Seralini, you and others in different fields have had the courage to be independent, and good for you for doing so. Those are my thoughts. Now from our public health segment. From Sergi, GreenMed Info. And by the way, Sergi has more than 17,000 studies from peer-reviewed literature, from independent peer-reviewed literature, showing the benefit of healthy lifestyle modification. So the next time your doctor or your nurse or dietitian or pharmacist says, vitamin C, it doesn't help, just remember, they're coming from bias, ignorance. But we have the quality studies to support everything in the way of healthy lifestyle modification. They don't. But if you doubt me, then challenge this. Why do we only have about 2,500 holistic medical doctors in the United States? Most are board certified. Many are from our finest schools. When 950,000 physicians will continue to tell their people, eat in moderation, but eat the American diet, do everything in moderation, and that very advice will put those people in the grave or with disease long before they should be there. When was the last time you saw these doctors join together for a national campaign to clean up the American diet, to clean up the advertising, especially the most vulnerable, children's advertising on television? We now have an epidemic. There is no question, there is no controversy anywhere in the United States that we have an epidemic of disease in the United States. We are the sickest nation in the world per population. There is no nation sicker than we are. And yet, we have children dying, people dying from diseases that they shouldn't. So when did they go out and protest? When did they call a general strike and to force the Surgeon General, force the White House, force the media and outlets to stop pushing forward propaganda? They haven't. Why? Once again, because the moment you stand forward, you declare yourself. When you come out of the closet, and it takes courage, and you say, what we're doing in the way of our current medical standards of treatment is neither scientific nor is it healing for the moment, up to 80% of all we do. We cause more death and illness than and disease, I should say, and injury than anything else, more than cancer, more than heart disease, more than diabetes. More people die every year in the United States because of bad medicine. Yet, when was the last time you saw an article on that? I wrote an article. It took 5 years with five scientists, and we submitted to 7,000 medical and scientific journals and every major media in the United States. Not one single one would publish it, nor would they argue, nor would they debate, because I also attached a letter saying I'd be happy to debate on the show. I call out. I request you to bring your scientists, your physicians, whoever they are, on to debate. The last time they chose to come out and debate me was the Surgeon General of the United States. That taught them a lesson. That, when you get your ass handed to you on national television, then maybe you think twice, so then you simply deny the issue happens. And so as long as they say, there's no story, but you had 700,000 to a million people die last year that didn't have to, that's no story. What is to us? So for those doctors who've come forward, chiropractors come forward, nurses come forward, I commend you for having the courage to be an independent thinking human being. Sarah G. has collected an enormous amount of material for verification. GreenMedInfo.com. Quote, a new study published in the journal Vaccine has brought to light an extremely disturbing, though still virtually unreported, dark side of immunization campaigns with low-income countries, namely observation that infant mortality sometimes increases when the number of co-administered vaccines increases, a finding diametrically opposed to the widely held belief that vaccination is always a life-saving intervention and that the more vaccines administered to infants, the better. This Hope Bill and his wife, Gates, read this because they're the biggest promoters of these campaigns out there. And then I read the actual report here, quote, co-administration of live measles and yellow fever vaccines and inactivated pentavalent vaccines is associated with increased death compared with measles and yellow fever vaccine only. Well, they're giving them in combinations, so there they go. Killing people, killing children, documented, published, and instead of pulling back, they actually increase it. Isn't it amazing? Think of this for a moment. We reward people for the effort of their intent instead of the results of their actions. If we only rewarded people for their results, then we'd have an awful lot of people that wouldn't be getting rewarded. In banking, in education, in all of politics. I'm Gary Noll. One final mention. I think you'll find this of interest, and then we're going to take a break and come back with my guest. We all know that for consenting adults, sex feels good. But why does it feel good? Because it stimulates oxytocin. Oxy, O-X-Y, tocin, T-O-C-I-N. That's a brain chemical that produces a calm, and here's the underlying and important message, it creates a safe feeling. By the way, you can see it in primates. Did you ever ask why do primates groom each other? It's not just to get rid of the infection or maybe a parasite. They'll do that. It's because when you're touching hair on an arm, a head, wherever, it creates this sense of oxytocin, and that creates bonding, and that creates trust. And that's very important. Also, why do you think some people are very loyal to people? When you hear someone say, I got your back, what they're saying is, I trust you. I trust you. I will not betray you. I've got your back. That's oxytocin. Just to have someone say that to you creates oxytocin. Listen to what I'm saying. Creating trust creates a stimulant, a hormone that actually bond you to that person. And that's why historically shaking someone's hand because you gave your word, that was your contract. And you felt something because you felt the oxytocin and you knew you could trust that. And so social trust promotes survival. And mammal brain rewards all this trust with good feelings. So sex triggers a big jolt of oxytocin, but it doesn't last long. It's quickly metabolized. And then guess what happens on the other side of it? With sex, when you don't have it, but you have had it, and you've shared it, and you've trust in that sharing, you actually feel endangered. Our brains keep seeking oxytocin because that promotes survival in the state of nature. For example, why do you think sheep flock together? Because in flocking together, it creates oxytocin by the group. And the same way with from wolves, for example. And so natural selection produces a brain that feels good with oxytocin, bad without it. If an ape is on its own, it's less likely to survive any primate. That's why it likes to be in a family. And by the way, for those of you who've questioned this idea, well, we shouldn't give any attribution to the spirit of things. That's all nonsense. I spent 30 years as a research scientist, a research fellow, a research scholar at the Institute of Applied Biology. I did two types of research. One was your research in anti-aging medicine and longevity and health. But the other research I did more quietly because it would just freak the people out downstairs, the guys doing the chemotherapy research, was I wanted to see about energy. And I saw that the basis of all life is the exchange of energy and how what really draws us to people and what keeps us with people and the respect of people or love of people is the quality of the energy they share with us. If someone shares a harsh energy or an arrogant energy, then all we know them by is how we feel. So it doesn't matter what mansions you build in life, you know, the Donald Trump phenomena, pay attention to him because look at what he can buy and do. But more importantly is the simple act of being kind and thoughtful and trusting with someone and sharing and giving. You create a really strong relationship and exchange of the energy. And then there's this French couple. I'll put this up later today on my website. They were in Africa, living in Africa, and they had a little daughter. And what they noticed was that the daughter had this energy with animals that no one else had. And then you see the video. So they began to film her over several years. And you cannot believe it until you see it. She will go right up to a herd of elephant, wild elephant. These are not trained. These are not circus-trained, abused animals. These are wild. And she'll get right up on the trunk. The elephant puts the big bull, puts it right up on the head, and she walks around it. She'll go over to a wild leopard. And you see the leopard grab her around the neck and immediately let go with no mark at all. And then the leopard lays down there, and she lays there and pets the leopard. And hyenas and poisonous snakes. Yeah. And you're thinking, what are the parents thinking? Don't let your kid get there. But there are those people in this world who have that, who have opened the door, like the idiot savant. Someone who cannot be taught and cannot learn, but has skills and qualities of insight that no human being or computer has. I've worked with them because I was curious. And I believe that they sit in a doorway. So they're aware of two universes simultaneously. The quantum universe and the current one. And they have that gift. And yet we don't have a word for it. So we say, you're an idiot savant. Well, what does that mean? Well, you have some talent. But what does that mean? It's all in the energy. It's the exchange of the energy. I also saw this when I've worked with primates my entire adult life, mainly rescuing them, helping them, finding them families and safe places and getting to there. But then I saw something where the matriarch of a group of chimpanzees died. Now, there's a large group. There are like 40 or 50 of these chimpanzees. And normally they'd be playing and grooming and yelling. And her body was put in a wheelbarrow by the person that was tending to her, taken to her grave, and they put a flower across her folded hands. Every one of those stopped, didn't move. Every one. I've never seen that in nature. Every single one of those chimpanzees was acknowledging her. Think of that. And yet we can't acknowledge a homeless person. We have a hard time acknowledging our own humanity because we block that energy. I'll get to that on an upcoming show. And what about the elephant whisperer in Africa? When he died last year, elephants from all over walked days, stood in front of his house, and then quietly left. There's no scientific explanation for that. The cynics, the skeptics, you know, the people who don't believe in anything except their own ego and their own portent of life, they can't understand that these people are connected to him. How did they know he died? How did they know where he lived in the outskirts of town? How did they know how to get there? Why did they all come from different places and then leave? They acknowledged it just like the chimpanzees. So just remember, you're all dealing with energy, and oxytocin is one of those things that creates energy. So when you're feeling withdrawn from oxytocin, what we also then is we have a hard time trusting. I'll do part two on this on an upcoming program. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to meet you, everyone. Have everyone in around the world listening right now. I appreciate it. On Monday evening at 8 p.m., I will be doing my own personal, this is not the station or the foundation, report to the listeners on what I see as the future of Pacifica and WBAI. This is based upon an extremely in-depth, comprehensive investigative report. It is simply to show what the likely scenario is, how we got here, and what we have to do if we want to change it. So, that'll be Monday evening, 8 p.m. I realize some of you don't have computers who are listening now, but you can listen over the telephone. Write down this number, 8 p.m. You'll call 401-347-0456. 401-347-0456. Before we go to my guest, let us say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Just a quick note to the audience. I am just about wrapping up signing up people for your retreat coming up on June 15th.
Okay, that's a WBAI retreat because it's all for helping the station. We have volunteered our time and energies, over 20 people, by the way. And because of all the professionals who are involved in donating their time, we're able to offer the retreat for $2,000. And that our hope is that that will help pay for the transmitter bill. And that's our goal. And so it's going to be from June 15th for 1 week. And we're going to have yoga and meditation and de-stressing. We're going to have cooking classes, raw food cooking classes, and gardening classes. We're going to have lectures and personal counseling. We're going to have exercise and power walking. We're going to have nature walks and nature looking, including at eagles. You're in a beautiful environment, organic food, juicing all day long, gourmet meals, gluten-free, sugar-free desserts. So it's going to be a wonderful experience. And this is one of our final call-outs to people who want to come. We're limiting it so people can get personal attention. So if you'd like to help change your life for a great week, and I believe people deserve these great weeks, then you'll give a call to Luann because she's screening people. And the reason she's screening is because I don't want anyone coming who expects something that we can't provide. It wouldn't be fair to the person. I want people coming who know what we're offering and can then match their needs to either start their life over, de-stress, get on a good diet, get some quality time with nature, be around positive people. That's what this is about. And I just want to give a few testimonials of people who, by the way, unsolicited, unedited, non-coached, they just lined up and said, we'd like to say a few words. Here are some of the comments from the people who were at the last WBI retreat.
All right, my name is Pedro. I'm from Staten Island, New York. I've been wanting to come to the retreats for some years now. It culminated at the right year, right time. This experience has been so unique. I've never been one to run. I've never been one to get up at 5 in the morning. Not only am I getting up at 5 in the morning and running, I was actually falling behind all week. And this morning, I actually was the leader of the pack. In fact, I was probably about 2 blocks in front of everybody else. Didn't break a sweat. So that really impressed me. Also, Gary did some energy work on me. It makes sense now, but all these emotions came rushing out. A lot of mixed emotions, but after the fact, I just felt cleansed. It was a cleaning of the mind, body, and soul. I must have lost about maybe 8 pounds by now. Between the yoga, the pool, exercising, it just brings you back to life. You're brand new again. You're reborn. If I had to do it again, it's not even a matter of having to. I would love to do this again. I actually recommend this to everyone. The food is absolutely amazing. I don't think I've ever gone 2 days without meat. It's been 7 days, and I don't miss it. There's nothing about chicken, beef, ribs. I just don't miss it. I basically wiped the slate clean in my life. This is a brand new beginning, and I thank everybody for co-creating this experience with me. Thank you.
My name is Mike. This has been one of the most exciting movements of my life that I've ever experienced. I've never felt like this in my world, in my whole life. The amount of energy that's been flowing through me, the experience that I've had with amongst people, it's something that you can't put a price on. This is one of the most beautiful moments in my life that I've experienced. The food is outrageous. This is all new to me. I'm not a vegan. It looks like I'm turning into a vegan, which is a good thing. I've never tried this type of food before. This is all brand new. And the amount of energy is unbelievable. And walking, I've never walked 4 miles a day in my life. We've been doing this every day of the week and with no problem. The energy is here. I mean, feel very blessed to be here. Thank you, Gary.
My name is Lillian, and I came here lacking a lot of energy, and my energy has really been restored in this bucolic setting. I'm simply amazed at what Gary has done here. Exercise, power walking, yoga, nutritious food and beverages, lectures from Gary in the evening. So much information to take back with me and to share with others. I'm so appreciative, Gary.
Those are just some of the comments. So if you'd like to support this radio station and its future, give a call to Luann Panessi, who will talk with you. And Luann, give that number, please.
Surely it's 631-504-6198. Again, that's 631-504-6198. If you get the answering machine, leave your name and number. I will return your call within 24 hours. And I'm looking forward to hearing from some people.
Thank you. Joining me in studio right now, and if you're watching this, you can see him now, is Richard Gage. Richard is a San Francisco-based architect and member of the American Institute of Architects. He is the founding member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and he is featured in the documentary film 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary.
Now, we're going to be filming you after this, but here are my major concerns, and I know there are concerns of others. On the one hand, every day we find out more and more of how we have been lied to by governmental agencies and or major corporations, and they have engaged in constant, chronic conspiracies. Just today in the New York Times, we showed how just one bank was involved in helping its clients disguise their investments. And there were thousands of clients, and hence thousands of people were engaged in this conspiracy. Well, they admitted their guilt. They're paying, you know, I don't know how much. I didn't see the amount. Probably $1 billion or a couple $1 billion, which is nothing for these people. You know, it's a tiny little smack on the wrist. But that's a conspiracy. And yet we have and I did the homework. I hired two lawyers for a year. And all I said was, find me how many lawsuits in our banking community, on Wall Street, and in our pharmaceutical industry have been settled where they have pled guilty, where they have been shown to have been wrong, where they have conspired in price fixing and insider trading, whatever it was. And yet, the public was never told this was a conspiracy. And there were one at the end of the year, they had boxes and boxes, and they said, you're dealing in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands, hundreds of thousands. And at the moment someone questions the official report on 9/11, you're called a conspiracy theorist, as if somehow you and all the scientists that you have engaged, critical thinkers who are putting their reputation on the line, you're stepping forward. No one that I know is going to come forward and defend the official position or challenge the official position if it could challenge their career unless they really feel so compelled to do so. So first, tell us about the idea that our major media refuses to do the interviews, refuses to do debates, which I think are healthy, where you take the people who believe in the 9/11 report and the people who've challenged 9/11 report and give them equal time and respectful form and let the public see where the truth is. Your thoughts on why they've refused to allow this to happen.
Yes, NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, the federal agency tasked with explaining these three World Trade Center high-rise collapses to us, will not engage with these questions, which are raised by now 2,100 architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. The American Institute of Architects will not engage with us. And I'm a member of the American Institute of Architects. We have 80 members of the American Institute of Architects. We cannot get mainstream media to engage with us in debates or putting on debates between us and scientists. We did have some discussion with a couple of physicists on Pacifica radio station, it was a couple of years ago, Dave Thomas from the New Mexico Tech Institute and Richard Muller from UC Berkeley, both of whom are heavily engaged in federal contracts with the Defense Department. We had an interesting, lively debate with them, so I have to say it's not a total loss, but we were able to show in that debate, the variety of evidence for the explosive demolition of all three World Trade Center high-rises. So I'm looking forward to sharing that evidence with you and to let you know why we're in town at the 9/11 Memorial Museum that is having its grand opening this week and why it's important that we're here to show people what they will not find in the World Trade Center Museum.
My concern is that when you appeared in that debate on Pacifica, the producers were excoriated. There was a hate campaign launched because they dared to defile the purity of Pacifica's airways with someone considered so irresponsible as yourself. And I thought at the moment, you attack someone before you question them. How is that reasonable? How does that promote a forum that sponsors open and honest dialogue? Lou Hill would have been appalled. And yet, there has not been this open and honest debate. If you're saying, and if a whole group of scientists are saying, there are reasonable questions about the official conclusions, that we cannot just allow to stand. They must be challenged. There's been no plausible explanation for the implosion of that third building, building number 7. And where do they describe the relevant material that was used in the explosive coming from? They're not addressing these issues. We've had engineers, we've had physicists, we've had people show in the how large beams were going out from the explosion. Well, a building that's collapsing doesn't throw that kind of structure, that weight, out to such a faraway place. It goes against the laws of physics, right? It all goes down, but it didn't. And all the personal witnesses. I've actually interviewed, before I decided to do a program on 9/11, we took a year to question everyone. And if they didn't have strongly compelling evidence, they didn't get in. But one of the people we had on actually went to the White House, was, you know, one of the people, you know, who was commended by President Bush. And yet he said, before the planes hit, right, before, I was downstairs in the basement, and we heard the explosion, and the whole door and everything blew right up on us, and the man I was with, who worked in the building, he was seriously injured, and I drug him up the steps, and then we only survived because we got underneath the vehicle, and so the debris didn't hit us, it hit the vehicle. And he said, and he has spoken with dozens of people who heard explosions in the basement. Police have said that. Firefighters said that. First responders said it. Well, when you start listening and have the technology to listen to the sounds, you know, you isolate each one, you start to hear these sounds. So either these people are all delusional, or there were explosions. Well, who would have the power to put those explosions in place, and who would be able to control the outcome of investigation? You wouldn't do something if you couldn't control the outcome. And that's true of all conspiracies. So what it does, it raises doubt. It does not tell us anything more than that. It doesn't tell us, and here's the danger. When you have, I believe, provocateurs or opportunists who take some measure of truth and extend it into speculative thought, then you discredit everyone. That's exactly what the orthodoxy wants. The official position wants someone to come forward and make some outrageous, unfounded, unsupportable claim, and then you smear everyone equally. And that's what they've done. But take away the people that have unfounded claims and just hold those who have independent evidence. And it makes for a very compelling case that we have been lied to. But then we can actually forensically go through the official report and you can show that. Now, what we're going to do, we're going to go in a moment and we're going to film you. And we're going to ask you, as if you were in a courtroom and I was a prosecuting attorney, we're going to put you, you know, on the spot. And I know that you're aware that, you know, we ask really strong questions. We're going to then post this up on my website so everyone can see the interview. And therefore, what we didn't have time today to do, we're going to do on film, which they can watch and see your whole interview, where you're going to show point for point what's wrong with the official position, who are the experts coming forward, what evidence do you have that could withstand in a court of law under cross-examination, what prima facie evidence do you have, so at least you will tell us what you do know, and we will not need to speculate beyond that. I don't believe in speculating beyond what we can prove at this point. Fair enough?
Yeah, sounds good, Gary.
Okay, Richard Gage, who's in New York, dropped by because we're filming him. But I decided I waved him in the studio because I just want to let people know that you can watch this extended, however long it takes. That's how long he's going to be here, and that's how long we're going to film him. So everything that we need to ask him about 9/11 and the controversies and the contradictions, we will, and film it and post it so everyone can see it. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more in our next program. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Very interesting program. Today, it is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories, and listeners have their say.
Great. Utrice, right now.